East Palestine, Ohio, is not the same place it was a year ago. Last February 3rd, 38 Norfolk Southern train cars derailed, and a dozen more caught fire there near the Pennsylvania border, close to people's homes and businesses. 11 of the derailed cars were carrying hazardous materials. First responders, government officials, and then agencies and the media swarmed the small village of less than 5,000 people. Then, a few days later, 900,000 pounds of vinyl chloride from five of the cars were intentionally vented and burned, which led to an explosion and dark plume seen from miles around. Since then, residents of East Palestine and nearby communities, regulators, doctors, and researchers have been dealing with the fallout. Over the next 2 weeks, we'll have some of their stories. In the days after the train derailment, hundreds of people living in and around East Palestine reported various health symptoms, like headaches, coughs, and rashes. We wanted to understand what it was like to live through this disaster, especially for parents. The Allegheny Front's Julie Grant spoke with Zhuja Jenness, mother of a 9-year-old boy, who has since moved away from East Palestine because she says the contamination was making them feel sick.
Before the derailment, things weren't perfect in Zhuja Jenness's life, but they were going pretty well.
My son was thriving in school, and previously when COVID happened, that was hard because everything went online, but when schools went back into session, he was doing really great and we were happy.
But on the night of February 3rd, they were up late crafting in the living room of their downtown East Palestine apartment. It was past 9 o'clock when they noticed flames out their front window. Jenna says they had no idea what was going on. She started texting with her neighbors, and that's how they found out there had been a train derailment about a half mile down the road. And people were speculating where the flames were coming from.
I wasn't really scared yet because I felt like if it was that serious, like there would be more urgency and more action or information, but there was like nothing. I'm like, okay, well, it must not be that big of a deal. Like, they've got it under control, obviously.
Jenna and her son walked outside into the dark, frigid night to check things out.
And then we saw like these huge flames, like hundreds of feet tall. And I was like, this is bad.
So they rushed back inside and watched from the window as sirens blared through the night.
It was really crazy. And my son, he's 9, he loves fire engines, police cars, so all that stuff. So he was like reenacting it with his toys and was like running back and forth to the window, like, you know, counting up all like the undercover cop cars and all this crazy stuff. And he's like, this is exciting, but it's scary at the same time.
Thankfully, her son finally fell asleep, but she stayed up trying to figure out what was going on and worrying.
Around 3 in the morning, I'm still awake trying to text people, asking the neighbors. Everyone's like, did you just hear that explosion? Because it was constantly exploding. There was these flames, like just, and they would go up and they would get it down and then it would restart and these explosions, these booms, and everyone's just like freaking out. Like, what do we do? Like, what's going on? And nobody had any information.
Then she heard a strange, loud noise coming from her son's room. She got up and rushed in.
It's like walking into a bleach, like a closet where, you know, half it spilled on the floor and it's been locked up. Like, it hits you like that. And he, my son, is, you know, up in his bed coughing, vomiting, like projectile vomiting, shaking. He's gasping for air, begging for water.
She was terrified and could feel it in her body, too.
You immediately get this film on your mouth, in your tongue. Just breathing in there, like, you know there's something in there and your body's telling you. It's like a huge warning sign, and he's obviously sick, wasn't sick before, and, you know, I thought it was in my head until within a few minutes. That's all it took. And then, you know, I was like, we gotta go. So we left immediately.
She grabbed a bag and they hopped in the car and drove 20 miles east to a hotel in Chippewa, Pennsylvania, near her son's grandmother.
And we get there like 5 in the morning. He finally like gets to sleep and he throws up like one more time and then he just passes out.
When he woke up later that morning, she says he seemed fine, back to his normal self.
But he started developing these rashes on his arms, which was weird because he hadn't been in contact with anything like that.
This was Saturday. Over the weekend, they spent time with his grandmother. It was Monday when Ohio Governor Mike DeWine and other public officials held a live-streamed press conference where they explained what was about to happen. That afternoon, they planned to vent the chemical vinyl chloride from 5 of the rail cars and purposely burn it. Otherwise, they worried it could explode.
Ohio Governor Mike DeWine and Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro are ordering an immediate evacuation in a 1-mile by 2-mile area surrounding East Palestine, which includes both Ohio and Pennsylvania.
DeWine pointed to a map, a red circle around the area closest to the derailment site. That's where their East Palestine apartment was.
Those in the red area are facing grave danger of death.
That afternoon, after the chemical burn had taken place in East Palestine, Janice was saying goodbye to her son's grandmother.
I stepped outside to go back to the hotel, and it was literally like a black wall, like in the middle of her street. It looked like fog, but very, very dark. It was black, but it wasn't like hovering up high or anything. It was like a whole wall. And I turned around, right, went back in, and she's immunocompromised, has health issues too. And I said, we have to go. Like, we all have to go. And she went outside and her face just turned white and we left. We all left.
Janice and her son are still living at a hotel further east in Cranberry, and he's been going to school online. And she tells me, as we stand outside on a chilly October day, that though he's hardly been back to East Palestine, he's had mysterious health issues since last February.
It was like 2 or 3 months later, he started getting these splotches on his face, like only on his face. And they would show up and last for like maybe anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour, and then they would go away. And none of his specialists can, you know, tell us what it is or what's causing it.
It's all been a lot for Janice herself to understand. So it's been really hard to figure out how to talk with her son about it, to help him make sense of what's happened, why he's not at his old school, and is living at a hotel miles from home.
How is this shaping a child's viewpoint of what the world is and what it means to be good, or what it means to find justice or, you know, safety even? Who can he trust?
That's a tough one. Even many adults have been asking this question. Can they trust the government, the EPA, Norfolk Southern? Can they even trust their own doctors to help them?
In those first weeks after the derailment and controlled burn of vinyl chloride from some of the cars, doctors and health officials were trying to figure out how to help residents like Zhuzha Jenis and her son, who were sick from chemical exposures. Here's the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant again with a look at what these health professionals did and didn't do, and how those decisions could have long-term consequences for the community.
After the train derailment and chemical burn in East Palestine, Dr. Gretchen Nickel, chief medical officer at East Liverpool City Hospital, about 20 miles south, started seeing patients with physical ailments that could be from chemical exposures.
So when I have patients that say, I've got a skin rash, I've got dermatitis, I'm having a hard time breathing, I'm diagnosing them with a pneumonitis, eyes, ears, nose, throat irritation.
Nickel declined an interview. This is her speaking at a workshop held by the National Academies of Sciences in November. She says she wasn't sure what to tell people.
And knowing that we had VOCs and vinyl chloride, what, if any, kind of testing should we be doing?
Many health officials were asking that same question, whether they should do urine and blood testing for residents exposed to chemicals in the derailment. They did get guidance from the Centers for Disease Control, but there was political wrangling between the state and federal governments, and it took 2 weeks for Ohio Governor Mike DeWine to request support from the CDC. By the time CDC and its Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, the ATSDR, arrived in East Palestine, people in the affected area were past the point of acute chemical exposure.
If you have questions during the presentation, please put them into the chat.
The Pennsylvania Department of Health offered a webinar for medical providers in late February. Dr. Mike Lynch, medical director of the Pittsburgh Poison Center, told area doctors that blood tests were not reliable, not clinically useful, and not recommended for patients.
So yes, with confidence, you can tell them that there is not a chemical test that they should be seeking either from you or elsewhere at this time that can help prove or disprove exposure or would help with diagnosis, treatment, or prognosis from any of these potential exposures.
Lynch said there shouldn't be any additional exposures since environmental monitoring by the EPA showed that chemicals in the air and water were at safe levels. The CDC did not respond to requests for an interview, but several experts we spoke with who focus on public health and research say this advice not to do widespread biological testing was a loss for the community. Dr. Maureen Lichtfeld used to work at ATSDR and was on the ground after the attacks on September 11th and the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. She's now dean of the Graduate School of Public Health at the University of Pittsburgh. Lichtfeld says one key to a better public health response is to gather as much biological data as possible from people who might have been exposed to chemicals. This means getting samples of their breath, blood, or urine.
So if we're not quick enough or early enough to capture that, we're losing the opportunity to measure directly what's happening in the people.
Lichtfeld says the federal government has protocols for a public health response that includes this kind of testing. And Ohio's two senators, Sherrod Brown and J.D. Vance, called for biological testing in a letter they wrote to health agencies in late February. Glenn Talaska's opinion was included in that letter. He's professor emeritus in environmental and public health sciences at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine. Talaska says emergency responders could easily be trained to take biological samples during that early exposure period.
What I would like to see would be for taking urine samples from individuals. You don't even have to know what the chemicals are. Take the urine samples, store them properly, and then when you find out what the chemicals are, then you could do the analysis for it.
But the Ohio Department of Health says the state's new training initiative for first responders does not include biological sampling. ATSDR did do an assessment of chemical exposures called an ACE survey of 700 Ohio and Pennsylvania residents looking at health symptoms. At a meeting at a local church months later, the agency's Jill Schugert shared the findings.
They had headaches, coughing, difficulty breathing, stuffy nose or sinus congestion, and burning nose or throat.
One mother in the pew said her daughter was still vomiting daily since the derailment.
You're absolutely right.
She and other concerned residents had results of urine testing that showed the markers for vinyl chloride in their bodies, and they had questions. CDC toxicologist Arthur Chang told them those tests are often incorrect. Instead of blood or urine sampling, he advised them to carefully track their health with a medical provider in case they develop cancer.
So that's the reason why we're saying go to your doctor so that you can get examined and get the proper test. We know how to treat angiosarcoma. We may not know how to treat, get rid of vinyl chloride from the body, but we know how to treat those cancers.
My jaw dropped.
Zhuzha Jenis couldn't believe what the CDC was saying. She moved away from East Palestine after the derailment, but brought the results of her 9-year-old son's urine test from April, showing the markers for vinyl chloride.
I looked around the room. I was like, did I just hear that right? And like literally like they came in and said these ACE surveys showed that you guys are sick. And yeah, the symptoms match chemical exposure. And then we're just not doing anything about it.
The CDC apologized to residents for what they're experiencing and said there's no treatment for chemicals in the body and that there's really nothing they could do. The National Academies convened public health experts last fall to identify future research in East Palestine. But that's not the same as a coordinated emergency response, according to Molly Jacobs. She's an environmental epidemiologist at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell and works with the Cancer and Environment Network of Southwestern Pennsylvania. Jacobs says without early biological testing and a health registry, companies like Norfolk Southern can dodge long-term responsibility for the damage they've caused.
What it does is that the industry has the opportunity to say, look, you know, nobody can find any conclusive connection between health effects and what happened. They can wipe their hands clean of that because we don't have the right tools in place to make those connections if they're there.
Next time a chemical disaster happens, these experts want emergency responders and health officials to be trained to manage not only the immediate medical issues, but also to look out for a community's long-term health interests. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
Norfolk Southern is an obvious target for the ire of many in East Palestine. But the Federal Environmental Protection Agency has also been criticized for its handling of the cleanup. One of those critics is a scientist who's worked for months in East Palestine trying to assess the damage. The Allegheny Front's Reed Fraser has more.
Andrew Welton is a professor of civil, environmental, and ecological engineering at Purdue University. He came to East Palestine to sample drinking water a few weeks after the derailment. He was worried people were allowed back into town soon after the controlled burning of vinyl chloride ended. And he found statements from the EPA and other agencies were downplaying potential hazards.
For example, the creeks were heavily contaminated 2 miles downstream. And government statements were that actually the contamination was contained to the derailment site.
His concerns grew when he learned about how the EPA was monitoring air. The agency was relying on a piece of equipment called a photoionization detector. These handheld devices give a snapshot of chemical concentrations in the air, but they're not very precise. The EPA later admitted they were not sensitive enough to detect unhealthy levels of butyl acrylate, one of the chemicals in the spill.
And it is with that faulty information that the evacuation order was lifted. Residents and business owners were encouraged to go back into their contaminated buildings.
Welton says the agency should have made sure chemical levels were below health thresholds before allowing people back in. In the weeks that followed, well after the evacuation order was lifted, residents reported symptoms like headache, dizziness, nosebleeds, and gastrointestinal problems. Even workers from the CDC got sick in East Palestine.
It just underscores how unprepared the agencies were in executing the public health and safety response, that they injured their own sister agency workers.
The EPA says it used the photoionization detectors to detect chemical concentrations high enough to cause acute, short-term, or life-threatening illnesses. Mark Durno is a response coordinator for the agency in East Palestine.
To determine whether or not emergency levels were present, acute levels were present, yes, we use these to make that determination.
With butyl acrylate, some health impacts begin at 20 parts per billion. But because the chemical is detectable by odor at much lower concentrations, Durno says a simple smell test was used to tell if a building was safe for return.
The odors would have been so strong at 20 parts per billion, you wouldn't be able to be in those buildings for more than a few minutes.
Deborah Shore, the EPA's regional administrator, said the agency lifted the evacuation order because of the data coming in from what she calls an extensive and sophisticated air monitoring network the EPA had set up in the town.
We don't have data that would show that exposure to the air in town is of at any levels of chemical that would be of health concerns.
What about all those people who were having symptoms weeks and months after the derailment? Shore says it's possible that they were more sensitive to chemicals than others, or that their symptoms were the result of stress and trauma.
People can have sensitivities to various types of trauma that express themselves physically and may be layered over past histories of trauma and other incidents that this derailment triggered, that express themselves physically, that are just as much a result of the train derailment.
Welton has consulted on other disasters, like a West Virginia chemical spill in 2014, in addition to wildfires and fuel spills. He says there's often a fog of war that local and even federal agencies fall under during a crisis, and that these agencies simply aren't prepared to respond to every contingency. But in many cases, he says, they ask for outside help from academics and other experts. That didn't happen here, he says.
All the agencies basically set up a bubble around themselves and kept Norfolk Southern and their contractors inside the bubble.
EPA and state officials defend their response. Deborah Shore says EPA followed the science and the law, and she points out no one died. Durno, the response coordinator, admits EPA could have done a better job communicating about potential chemical risks when it let people back into town.
Instead of just making simple statements that it's okay to go home, we should have given them more guidance on what that meant. You know, what did it mean to come home and, you know, experience some of these odors?
That's one of the lessons the agency will take into consideration for analysis in preparing for, as he puts it, the next one.
Regulators say they've cleaned up the site where the Norfolk Southern cars carrying hazardous chemicals derailed. Regulators also say that the air in East Palestine is clear of contamination. But that's not the case with a creek running through the middle of town. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports some are still worried about its safety.
Sulphur Run is a shallow stream that cuts between houses in the village of East Palestine. On the side of the stream stand Randy DeHaven and Christina Seisloff, who's pushing her rubber boot into the sandy stream bed.
There it is.
An oily plume of chemicals erupts in the brownish-gray water.
rainbow sheen, kind of like what you would see in a puddle at a gas station.
Sislav has brought a mask because the creek water still gives her headaches. She lists off a few chemicals that have been found in the stream sediment by independent and government tests.
Benzene, pyrene, naphthalene, hydrocarbons.
In the days after the derailment and subsequent spill, over 40,000 fish and other species died in Sulphur Run and the stream it flows into, Leslie Run. DeHaven, who lives in town and has been filming the stream for much of the past year, saw it firsthand.
Well, most of them sank. Some of the frogs, you know, but most of them were belly up. there was a few fish floating, but a lot of them were just laid on the bottom.
Sislav grew up in the area and has been helping DeHaven and a group of volunteers document pollution in the stream.
It's like things are never going to be the same. Or be how they were. It's just ruined.
Regulators say the water flowing through Sulphur and Leslie Runs is recovering after months of cleanup work, and fish have started coming back. A 2022 survey by the state found the streams were polluted with some of the same chemicals released in the derailment. But there's more pollution in Sulphur Run today than before the derailment, says Mark Durno, a site coordinator for EPA in East Palestine.
We do have our survey results, you know, showing that almost 70% of Sulphur Run has some level of sheening happening.
The derailment released hazardous chemicals like butyl acrylate and the carcinogen vinyl chloride into the stream, but Durno says those are mostly gone. What's left in the stream bed is a type of oil that spilled in the derailment, says Deborah Shore, regional administrator for EPA.
There was a lube oil in one of the tanks that derailed, and that discharged into the ditches and made its way into Sulphur Run and somewhat in Leslie Run.
The cleanup plan, according to regulators, is still being worked out. It will likely involve a technique called sediment washing. Ann Vogel, head of Ohio's state EPA, explained the process on a recent visit to a restored section of the stream.
You stir the sediment, you release the chemical from the sediment, you release whatever's, if it's lube oil or whatever's getting held up under a rock, for example, and then we have booms in place in the creek so that any product is collected and then we vacuum it up.
Making the situation more complicated is the fact that Sulphur Run flows directly beneath several buildings in town through a series of culverts. Those include municipal offices for the village of East Palestine. Several workers there got sick from chemical fumes after the spill, according to Andrew Welton, a professor of environmental engineering at Purdue University, who's studying the derailment's aftermath.
We did physically visit a building that was, in fact, contaminated for at least 4.5 months because of the contamination that came in.
Gary Taylor lives above Sulphur Run in a home built on top of one of the stream's culverts. He was surprised to learn there was still contamination in the stream, which passes a few feet beneath his house. The message he received from EPA and Norfolk Southern and its contractors has been that things are going back to normal.
The creek was all fine. Everything, the land, the ground's all fine. The air quality is fine. And they said it's all good. There ain't nothing to worry about.
Taylor is blind. His girlfriend, Tracy Wright, has MS. Neither drive, so relocating outside of town wasn't an option. Instead, they stayed in their rented house above Sulphur Run all year, including months when it smelled like a burnt furnace filter, even when the heat wasn't on. Now he's angry to find out there's still contamination.
They were lying to me. Yeah. And I wish I could sue their ass, I would. But lying to, I don't like to be lied to. I live here. This is my health we're talking about and my babes.
A few doors down is Chrissy Ferguson's house. In her basement, she shows off a drain that sometimes backs up with creek water during heavy rains. She says baby doll heads and baseballs have come up through the drain onto her basement floor.
There's been times that the water has taken that hot water tank, totally submersed it.
She's been living with her family in a house Norfolk Southern is paying for in the next town over because the chemical smell inside her own home was unbearable. As recently as September, her eyes stung after spending less than an hour there.
They became bloodshot, swollen. It lasted for 4 days, burning.
She said the smell has improved, but her eyes still get irritated when she goes into the basement. EPA says there shouldn't be any vapors getting into Ferguson's or anyone's house right now, but Ferguson still worries she'll never be able to live here again in the house where she grew up.
I don't want those waters to come in and make my family sick.
Ferguson's 82-year-old mother was still living in the house the night of the derailment. She often asks her daughter, "When will we go home?" Chrissy Ferguson's answer, "Not today, Mom."
Some residents are still worried about chemical exposure from the wreck inside their homes, but the EPA says it won't test. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports.
Last year, Candace DeSanzo and her family spent months away from their home in East Palestine because being at home made them feel sick. Every time they came back to town, their symptoms would return.
One time we were here for 2 hours and we were driving out and I look back and there's blood coming out of my one-year-old's mouth.
Over the summer, DeSanzo and her family returned to their home less than a mile from the derailment site. She set up half a dozen air filters and threw out bags of clothes that smelled like chemicals. Gradually things improved, but DeSanzo is still worried there's contamination in some parts of the house, like one room in her basement.
And every time I was standing down there, in that specific area, I'd fold clothes right there, I'd start to get my toes tingly. My toes would start tingling, and my nose would start running, and my throat would start hurting.
DeSanzo got a chemical test in her house, which found dioxins, toxic chemicals associated with the derailment, on her property. She wants the EPA to periodically test the inside of her home, but the agency has declined. This baffles her.
Why would they not? If there's only two of us crazies in this town that don't think it's safe, test our homes.
The EPA has been testing outdoor air all year in East Palestine for volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, like the chemicals released in the derailment. Mark Durno is a site coordinator in East Palestine for EPA.
Not only are we not seeing chemicals of concern at low levels, we're not seeing them at all.
Since the air is clear now, Durno thinks there's no way for contaminants to make their way into homes. He also says it would be hard to tell if any detectable chemicals came from the derailment or from chemicals already inside people's homes from paints, plastics, and cigarette smoke.
Because of all the sources of volatile organics already in homes, from all the compounds and lifestyle and structural and chemicals that are already in people's homes.
Scientists contacted by the Allegheny Front said indoor testing would be a good idea in East Palestine. Andrew Welton, an environmental engineer at Purdue University, says chemicals released into the environment can get inside people's homes through underground aquifers, soil, or even sewer lines. He says the EPA's own scientists have published guidance on this concept, known as vapor intrusion.
This occurs near Superfund sites where you have known chemical releases. VOCs get into the sewers, they can come up into the homes, and they can cause immediate or long-term health impacts.
EPA says it's testing soil and groundwater and says there's no evidence to suggest contamination has spread throughout town. Still, Kimberly Garrett, an environmental toxicologist at Northeastern University, says regulators should have been doing indoor testing from the beginning in East Palestine.
It would have been beneficial to collect that data as soon as possible, to collect home samples as soon as possible and do it repeatedly until they could show that either there wasn't anything of concern inside the homes, or if there was, that we could see it decrease over time, which is what we would expect.
Michael Bassessi, an environmental health scientist at Ohio State, is part of a team of researchers analyzing chemical testing done in East Palestine by the EPA and others. From what he's seen, he doesn't think the level of contamination poses a long-term health threat. But he says there's only one way to find out for sure.
Sometimes it warrants collecting samples to answer the question with data.
Still, some in East Palestine might not want EPA to test their homes. Ben Terwilliger lives about 900 feet from the derailment. He's had neighbors who've had their homes tested by Norfolk Southern and EPA.
And they all came back, nothing's wrong. Everything's well within the limits. Well, we all saw the nuclear cloud, but, you know, I find that hard to believe.
EPA, it turned out, was allowing Norfolk Southern to use an instrument that doesn't adequately detect butyl acrylate, one of the chemicals that spilled in the derailment. It's that kind of experience that leads Terwilliger and others to be skeptical about EPA's testing.
Personally, I don't really trust the EPA, to tell the truth.
both Candace DeSanzo and Ben Terwilliger would like to leave a town they think is polluted, but right now, neither say they can afford to.